Drive Time on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. Create a brighter future with a savings plan from Zurich. Visit zurich.ie to find out more.
Now, fresh plans are being made to remember Aidan McInaspie, a young GAA player killed by a British soldier in County Tyrone 35 years ago this month. 53-year-old David Holden is this week beginning a three-year suspended sentence for the manslaughter of the 23-year-old at Auchnacloy in 1988. He's the first British Army veteran convicted of a legacy offence since the Good Friday Agreement. It comes after a three-decade campaign for justice by the McInaspie family, as Barry Lennon outlines in this special report.
He dragged us through the courts for years. We lost our father and sister in the duration of that. It was like being stopped at the checkpoint. Every time we came here, we weren't looking for a pound of flesh. We're looking for just truth and justice.
Aidan's brother Sean outside Belfast Crown Court last Thursday.
The door is closed, and it might be just closed full of that there, but it's black. You know, you're starting to see a bit of light through it, so you are. My mother was a very religious woman, and she knew this day would come.
David Holden's conviction and sentence came after three decades of grief for the McInaspie family. After 35 years of fighting for truth for Aidan, killed on his way to the Gaelic ground. The story begins here at Auchnacloy. Today cars pass freely between Tyrone and Monaghan, but back in 1988 a hard, harsh border existed between north and south. Catholics, especially young GAA players, were consistently harassed going through the British Army checkpoint. And it's here I meet Aidan's brother Sean.
This is the main Dublin Derry Road. This is where we're walking now. Was once a big massive checkpoint. It was a notorious checkpoint. It would have been one of the most notorious known checkpoints on the whole border.
Many's a morning you'd have got up and the soldiers would have been standing at the front window, knocking the front window and looking in at you.
Philomena and Michael Muldoon lived beside the Auchnacloy checkpoint.
Because you were right beside it when you went outside to do anything at the back. Yeah. They were shouting out at the singers at you.
They had a big searchlight and they used to shine this big huge spotlight right in our back window. But they said, we'll eventually get you. And this is, as I say, they kept intimidating you. Just pure aggravation all the time.
Tell me about your wedding day. What happened?
On our wedding day, whenever we come down to the checkpoint, the soldiers asked me for my ID, my name, and my wife for her names, and what was going on. And we just catch ourselves going, what's going on? And us dressing in wedding gear. What we went through, it was totally extreme. Every day, as I say, you're going through this. I had an Alsatian dog. I had a thick Alsatian dog in the car with me. And whenever I had the dog, they couldn't search me, because the dog would have went mad. They actually threatened to shoot the dog. They engaged the gun on one occasion and they said, we're going to shoot that fucking dog. The soldiers, after the Loch Gord shooting, the soldiers said, we are going to get yous all. Yous are all IRA bastards and all this. This is the way they treated us. Everybody in their eyes was suspects, which was totally wrong. We were Catholics living in a staunch Protestant town.
23-year-old Aidan McInaspie was the youngest in a family of six living in Auchnacloy. Critically, Aidan McInaspie was an innocent man but came from a Republican family. Yet, he suffered constant harassment from British soldiers at Auchnacloy for over 7 years. His brother Sean again.
He was stopped, pulled in, the car was ripped apart. The car was ripped apart. So then they dragged him. They pulled him out of the car by his heels and they dragged him into the back, into the searching area.
Aidan had to go through the checkpoint at least twice a day for his job at a poultry farm near Monaghan town. His work colleagues remember the harassment, how he could be stopped for up to 4 hours.
I remember one time he talked about he had his lunch in the back of the motorbike, you know, and they took the bike in to search it, and then when he opened the lunch it was all wet or whatever. You could imagine, like, you know, what they'd done, so therefore it was binned, and, you know, that kind of harassment, you know.
You looked around, if he wasn't there, you knew what was happening, and then he'd arrive in and it could be any time of the day. So he always knew what was going on. So he just wanted to get through, but he couldn't, and that was it.
We sort of started to see each other regularly, but it was only then when I started to see Aidan regularly that I realised that the regular was a regular for Aidan in being stopped consistently at checkpoints 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 times a day, and very, very unpleasant experiences, some of which I will never, ever discuss with anyone.
Eita was Aidan's girlfriend for the 3 years before the shooting.
It just started to get worse and worse and worse. We spent so much time in Donegal. We spent so much time in just anywhere away from the north that we could get. Every time you came back, it was that dread. You know, you're all fun and laughter, and just like young people should be, that are going out with each other and totally in love. Then you start moving back towards the border, and the closer we came to that border, it was like that dark shadow falling back over you, because you just knew you were coming to that checkpoint again. You didn't know what to do, because the people who were in power that should be protecting you were the people who were actually causing the trouble in the first place.
They're giving hell, going through morning and night.
Aidan's cousin Moretta and his sister Margot.
I was in the house one day that he come in, I can remember it, me and mum were there, and he come in and he was nearly crying, and there was tears in his eyes, and he had to walk out of the room, and I goes, what's wrong? So then he come in a wee way, and he says they had him by the throat. His throat was all red with Adam, but he didn't want mummy to know about it, like, you know.
Your mother was very devoted to him in terms of getting through that checkpoint.
Yes. Oh, she was great. Yeah,
she would go down with him, didn't she, Margot?
She used to sit in the car, go through the checkpoint, because they weren't as bad when the mother was there, and then she'd go down with her bike in the evening to wait on the other side to come across with him. Okay. When he'd be on his own, then they would give him a lot of hassle.
The mother had to escort Aidan through the checkpoint, sit with him until he got through to the Monaghan side, and God rest Lizzie, I had to walk back, you know.
Rain, hail, snow, or dark nights or anything, she took him. Took him home.
Security forces made several threats to Aidan's life. Here's his workmate, John.
Aidan actually told me what they said, like, I mean, that they were gonna kill him. And when he said it to me, like, you know, what do you say to somebody when they tell you something like that, you know?
And even on the morning of the shooting, another threat.
About 11:30 to 11:45, Aidan was going to a funeral over the border. He pulled in to get diesel, and the next thing was, all of a sudden, nowhere, the army arrived and they just piled the rifles straight up at him and kept following him with the rifles and sneered and laughed whenever he got the diesel.
They told my father the week previous to let that they had a bullet for him, that they're going to shoot your son, I moved south, to the south.
You said to Aidan, why don't you move to the south?
So he says, well, who's going to stay with Dad and Ma? Who's going to look after Dad and Ma? Have we done that?
The 21st of February 1988. Aidan attended a family funeral. After, he went home to light a fire for his mother so the house would be warm when she returned. Aidan then set off for the local Gaelic ground. He was togging out for Ahaloo against local rivals Cleishel. He'd walked through the army checkpoint when tragedy struck.
We're just coming in. This is the Ahaloo. That's their training pitch there on the right-hand side there. We're coming up to the Ahaloo grounds here. And just here in front of us is the monument. This is where he was shot. See them hills there? Just come down the other side of the football field. That's the river there. That's the border over there. This is where Aidan was shot. Just walking along, he had his kit bag on his shoulder, just as the way you see thousands and thousands of people walking to football matches today.
Aidan was killed at around 10 to 3 that sunny Sunday afternoon. 18-year-old Grenadier Guardsman David Holden fired the fatal bullet from a lookout post. It came from a distance of 283 metres.
And we were stopped at the checkpoint in Auchnacloy when the shots rang out.
Brendan Holland, then manager of Cleishel. He was first to Aidan after the shooting.
And he was just literally breathing his last as I approached him. He gave a little sigh, and then I noticed that on the chest of his white shirt was a little, about the size of a 10-pence piece, red blotch on his shirt. And then I looked under his body and the blood was actually pouring from his back. And he gave a little sigh and that was it. And we said a prayer in his ear as he died. Leaves an indelible mark. You shouldn't witness a young man dying like that.
Somebody came running into the dressing room and said, Aidan McInnesby's been shot.
John Cuddy played for Ahaloo with Aidan.
We all run down to his body, you know what I mean? And we're all in disbelief at this, what happened. Like, you know, crowd had gathered round Aidan at this stage, you know, and if the whole team was there.
It was pandemonium, wasn't it?
Absolutely. Everybody was in shock. Nobody knew what to do here. And maybe after a while, the Brits and the RUC started to run out towards his body and came walking out. And I remember one cop in particular, he was armed with a machine gun, and I remember him smirking and laughing, and I never forgot that. So I can picture that boy to this day, 35 years later. I had nightmares after he was shot. I can still see him lying on the ground. I can still see his eyes rolling in his head. That one day will just stay in my memory forever. I'll never forget. And for him to be murdered and on his way to his national game, it still rankles with me. Like,
I was with friends of mine, and we would have been down at Nuts Corner for the day, and we arrived back at my house.
Aidan's former girlfriend, Eita, again.
Just as we pulled up at the front door, it came on the news, just as I was opening the door of the car, that there has been a shooting at Auchnacloy, and I walked down the path, and I knew in my heart it was him. They'd promised it for so many years, and we walked towards the door, and when I opened the door, the phone was ringing, and I knew it was somebody telling me. It was my sister who had rang me to say. Devastating, totally devastating. To lose Aidan that way was just heartbreaking. Self and Aidan had broken up at that point. And I know that a lot of people since have said that Aidan actually wanted the relationship to break because he felt that something was going to happen to me and to him.
David Holden maintains to this very day that his hands might have been wet from cleaning duties 10 minutes earlier, and so they could have slipped off the trigger of the gun, firing 3 bullets accidentally. The army claims one of the bullets ricocheted off the road before hitting Aidan McInnesby.
My mother used to walk in the evenings. My mother used to walk down here every evening, say a decade of the rosary at this grave, and walk home.
The McInnesby family never believed the incident an accident, pointing to the years of harassment Aidan had suffered. There were also cheers when the young man was killed. Bridie McBride lives beside the checkpoint.
Aidan came down in the car and got out and went, took his football bag and went out the thing, and it wasn't that long until I heard shot. So I run out to the door and there came two down out of the pillar and them cheering and clapping.
Who was cheering and clapping?
A soldier and a policeman.
Here's Martina Mulgrew.
Next thing we heard the gunfire and we looked out and the police. One policeman and one British Army come down from the tower, laughing and kyohoing, and got into a car, sitting, and away they went. You know, when they come down clapping and laughing, what I goes, no, there's something going on here, somebody's been killed.
Bridie McCartan was driving through the checkpoint at the time of the shooting. Her daughter, Grania, reads her account of what happened.
So she heard the gunfire, then the light turned green and she drove into the checkpoint and stopped. She said that she always remembers it clearly. She could hear joking and laughing inside and someone shouted, "That will cost another bomb or Bob." She wasn't clear of what actually they were saying. I suppose maybe it was the English accent. Then, as far as she could remember, she thinks it was a policeman. He came out of the hut and rushed her on quite quickly. And as I say, in her mind, she would be keen to point out that that wasn't common occurrence. But on that particular day, they wanted her out. They were waving her on. They never even asked for anything. They just told her to drive on.
What did she do with this account? She went to the local politician.
Yeah, because obviously she thought what was going on, and the laughing that was standing out in her mind. You know, what were they laughing about? Gunfire had just went off and they were laughing. You know, I wouldn't think that that's where there should have been a state of panic, not laughing and joking.
Soldiers claim they didn't check to see whether anyone had been injured by Holden's accidental discharge. This despite the fact they knew Aidan McInnesby, a so-called person of interest in the eyes of the British Army, was the only person on the road at the time. David Holden claims he didn't even know he'd shot anyone until later that night. This, despite the fact his colleagues insist he let out a shrill and was pale and in shock immediately after the shooting. and the explanation of the shooting as an accident was quickly disseminated. This despite the fact nobody from the army or police went to check on Aidan McInnespy for half an hour after the killing.
I came home and I rang the RUC station in Dungannon.
Anthony McGonnell was an SDLP councillor at the time and involved with Killeshall GAA.
Asked for a senior officer. Nobody was available. I rang RUC headquarters in Belfast, and this was only a short time after the shooting occurred. The press officer in RUC headquarters in Knockan, Belfast, told me it was an accidental discharge.
The notes from the time, which have been recently released, show how you rang the police at 4:15, which was an hour after the shooting.
That explanation came pretty quickly. There was cover up from day one here. The very fact that an hour after the shooting took place, that a PR person was given it out as an accidental discharge, that in itself showed that there was cover up from the outset.
Some witnesses claim just one shot was fired rather than three. And the road was also closed the next day, the suspicion for fresh ricochets to be gouged into the tar. Tony McBride lives beside the checkpoint.
They closed the road here for must have been a couple of hours. And the next thing they were shooting, there was a wee burst of fire. And then it showed the next day all this road was marked and there was nonsense laid on it the next night.
And the harassment continued.
The harassment actually continued worse after Aidan was shot. But once they took Aidan out of it, luckily anybody else, like myself, they left everybody so afraid, terrified, that like he told you, we'll do the same to you as McInnespy.
Also, after Aidan was shot, my father and mother were getting phone calls in the middle of the night asking to speak to Aidan and roaring and laughing where Aidan was.
Coming up in part two, the long road to justice for Aidan McInnespy. The McInnespy family weren't the only ones not to believe the shooting an accident. In an unprecedented move, the Charles Haughey government launched its own inquiry, appointing then Deputy Garda Commissioner Eugene Crowley to investigate the killing. As part of this, Aidan's body was exhumed for a second autopsy in Monaghan. Dr. Brendan MacDonald was there. He says some body parts were missing.
If you're shot directly, well, obviously, there's a different pattern with an entry wound and an exit wound. Now, if it comes off the ground just below you, and obviously it goes on an upward trajectory, well, then one could see where the entry wound is and then where the exit wound is. But, and there's the crux of this, a lot of his front chest tissues weren't put back in beside the rest of his body. To give a true picture, you wouldn't have had a scene to the sternum where clearly the bullet either was the entry wound or the exit wound. So it's not apparent. The actual forensics around the evidence were definitely obscured because the evidence was missing. Now, I don't know...
Why was it missing?
That is a million-dollar question. And it potentially was in the way of the trajectory if the bullet was missing.
In 2018, it emerged how Aidan's ribcage had been disposed of, denying the family's wish of a full Christian burial. The Crowley report concluded it was difficult to accept David Holden's explanation for the shooting, noting how it represented too much of a coincidence. However, these findings weren't released until December 2022. The soldier was initially charged with manslaughter, but criminal charges were dropped in September 88, and Holden subsequently discharged from the army. He'd go on to forge a successful career in private security and would eventually become a grandfather. The McInnespy family, meanwhile, campaigned tirelessly for a fresh look at the case. An inquest in 1993 offered hope for Aidan's sister, Eilish.
We feel that the jury have actually now at that stage left it open. They haven't actually said whether it was done deliberately or whether it was an accident, and it has been left open, and it has left the family with some hope for the future as well in continuing the fight to get justice.
In 2008, the Historical Inquiries Team, established to investigate controversial Troubles-related killings, concluded David Holden's description of events was the least likely version of what happened. The HET's findings were read to Eilish on her deathbed.
You're going nowhere and you get no support.
from any angle. Yeah, it was a slow, lonely journey for her.
Aidan's brother, Vincent.
And unfortunately, Elise was in Craigavon Hospital at the time. We were in with her with the HCT when they read out the report to her. Again, then Elise thumbs up that you were accept that, you know.
And Aidan's just about got to hear that before she passed.
She was happy to get that at that stage. And from that, the family took up the mantle to try to push on with the case, not let it slip away.
The McInnesbys fought on. In 2016, the North's Public Prosecution Service decided to review the decision not to prosecute the Army veteran. And in 2018, David Holden was once again charged with manslaughter. 2 years later, the McInnesbys came face to face with the man who shot Aidan for the very first time.
There were so many different emotions, and probably at the beginning, and we've talked about this a lot, as a mother myself and having seven children, you have a vision of what it will be like when you go down there.
Aidan's sister-in-law, Brenda.
Maybe my first thought, and I'll be very honest here, was, am I going to go down and see this person in front of me? David Holden, that was 18 years of age at the time. He was a young fella, had, you know, of children that age myself. What way was he going to be? Was I going to go down and see this pitiful person that was going to be very remorseful or sorry? Even though it had taken 34 years and no truth had ever come out, you still had this hope maybe as a mother and that he was going to be sorry. But to be honest, I never seen it. And that probably hurt even more.
After a series of appeals and court challenges, David Holden finally stood trial for the manslaughter of Aidan McInnesby in March of last year. Proceedings were hit by delays, though, and so it became a race against time for the McInnesby family, as Aidan's 87-year-old father John's health deteriorated.
I'd like to hear the truth. That's what I want to hear. We didn't get any truth. We got nothing. We got nothing. So all we're looking for is the truth. And that's it. That'd be a big satisfaction to me. You're up against a stone wall. You aren't going to get it. For why that person done it, we're just waiting in hope. Just waiting in hope.
John McInnesby died shortly before the case concluded, without ever finding out what exactly happened to his son. Friday, the 25th of November, 2022, Belfast. Judge Justice O'Hara delivers his verdict. 40 of Aidan McInnesby's family and friends sit side by side in court with supporters of the Army veteran.
I suppose in some ways my life has moved on, but I've never forgotten Aidan.
Aidan's former girlfriend, Eita, again.
Closer I got to Belfast, the stomach was going, you know, I was feeling a bit ill nearly. The trepidation of not knowing what's going to be said, what's going to happen. And then when the judge very clearly started to deliver his verdict.
At the heart of this trial is a young man who was shot dead as he walked along a country road to a GAA match. He posed no threat to anyone that Sunday afternoon. But he was killed.
It was a very emotional day. You're listening to the judge, but you're picturing Aidan. You're picturing all those happy times together. You're picturing the laugh and the fun. You know, the days away, the weekends away, you know, talking about your life and the future. And all those feelings are rolling past you.
Whether the defendant's hands were wet or not, his explanation in the witness box as to how the weapon came to be fired was entirely unconvincing. I conclude that it is a deliberately false account of what happened.
In the earlier parts of it going through, you're wondering what side is the judge going to go. It's like a game of football. You're in here, went for a draw. As he started going on when you were sales, he's going to get the results we want, you know.
The defendant aimed the weapon and pulled the trigger. In my judgment, he is beyond any reasonable doubt criminally culpable. I find the defendant guilty of the manslaughter of Aidan McInnesby by gross negligence.
When he eventually said he called it, he was guilty. It was emotional. Yeah, there was nobody up cheering or clapping. Everybody put their heads down, could just think back in the past and think how we got here. And those tears and all you could do is just keep your head down and think of that. You know, yes, all the years you've done for it, we got justice through the system.
And then he said, you're guilty. I think everyone, all of us sitting there, it became a very emotional event and people just couldn't believe that in this, it has taken this long, but to some degree there had been some level of justice for him, in that at least they had admitted that the Army in some way were at fault for what happened to him.
Aidan's friends, Philomena and Michael Muldoon.
When you heard that word guilty, what did you think?
Just shock.
Shock?
Just pure shock. Never thought I would hear that word.
Mm-hmm.
Guilty.
Don't think anybody really expected guilty. Nobody knew what to do. Everybody, and it wasn't that people, nobody was jumping up, and everybody knew he was guilty. Like, but it was good to get the judgment.
Last Thursday, David Holden received a 3-year suspended sentence for the manslaughter of Aidan McInnespie. The judge questioned the former soldier's remorse. After, Sean McInnespie said he felt his brother could finally rest in peace.
It doesn't take away from the fact that he was found guilty for the illegal shooting, of unlawful shooting of our brother Aidan, regardless of the suspended sentence. We have a bit of a relief. There's a bit of an end game.
If he had got 40 years, 50 years here today, it wasn't going to bring Aidan back. So, but looking for a finer flesh, it's not the thing that we are out for. We're just out for a fair system.
Truth.
And if he had got some sort of a sentence in it, we wouldn't have joiced or lived on it or celebrated it. If he had got it, he'd be entitled to get it.
Aidan, your sister Ailish, John, and of course Lizzie, who was mentioned by the judge as well, they can perhaps rest in some peace as well.
Oh, absolutely. My dad, my mother, Ailish and Aidan was with us in spirit.
David Holden slipped out of court as the McInnespie family spoke to the media. His face covered with a large black mask. He got into a car covered with bin liners. Aidan McInnespie's memory lives on. A popular song in his name. A GAA club in his honour in Boston. Teams often stopping at the spot he died in Auchnacloy. In Tyrone GAA, it's also planning a fresh memorial. For his family, it's a source of great comfort.
Aidan was just an ordinary lad. Like, he wasn't any different from any other young lad. Like, he wasn't a star footballer, he wasn't a Peter Canavan. He was just an ordinary basic lad, you see, in any street or in any place throughout Ireland. It's amazing for his name now to be recognised all over Ireland, parts of the world now as well. Like, it's amazing, like, the way it's all come out, what they've done to him. They put him in such a high profile that his name now is recognised everywhere all over the world.
What would Aidan McInnespie make of it all? 35 years of campaigning, of fighting, and to get there in the end.
Looking down and smiling and saying they didn't get all they wanted their own way. Aidan's looking down and saying they fought away, got justice, and so close to justice that could be. And Aidan was looking down and saying to the rest of the families, go, you're at it too. Try to get justice for your families.
And that is the music of The Ballad of Aidan McInnespie by Jerry Cunningham, ending that special report by Barry Lenehan.